Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God, and we're going to talk about ideological subversion. That's a phrase that was coined by Yuri Bezmenov, who was a KGB officer who worked for the KGB in India and eventually defected back in the 80s to the United States. He explains ideological subversion as the process which is legitimate, overt, and open. You can see it with your own eyes. All you have to do, all American mass media has to do, is to unplug their bananas from their ears, open up their eyes, and they can see it. There is no mystery. It has nothing to do with espionage. I know that espionage, intelligence gathering, looks more romantic. It sells more deodorants through the advertising. Probably. That's why Hollywood producers are so crazy about James Bond types of thrillers. But he's saying that actually that's not what most of the KGB is doing. They're doing something very open, very observable. And they've been doing it for years. I remember when I was growing up, I met Herb Philbrick and Dr. Schwartz, and Herb Philbrick was the FBI agent who was the subject matter of the book and eventually movie and TV series I Led Three Lives. And he was an agent for the Soviet Union, but he was also an agent for the FBI. Also, he was a regular guy with a regular job. And he lived this espionage type existence, and they made a show about it. I watched the show when I was a little kid, but then I actually got to meet Herb Philbrick and talk to him. And while they believe that there was definitely a Soviet threat, the KGB was working behind the scenes, you know, stealing secrets, etc., you know, the James Bond type agent. The real economically successful way in which the Soviets would hope to eventually conquer the United States was through ideological subversion, which, according to Yuri, is done right out in the open where you can see it. You can actually watch it happen. Their plans for undermining America and many other countries have been published in their own books. You can read them. It's kind of like Mein Kampf. Hitler said everything he was going to do. He wrote it down in a book. You could get the book and read it, and you knew what he was going to do. But there's a psychological disconnect. Even though you know somebody is going to do something to you, you can't believe it. And so you continue to facilitate him or them in doing what they're doing. Mengele once commented, I can't remember the exact words, but he said that he would do these terrible things to his patients. And he said they were so terrible that the people could not believe that you were doing it to them. And they actually cooperated with you so that you can continue to do these terrible things. They were so traumatized by it. They accepted it as the norm. And it's really important that you understand this psychological approach, not simply because the Soviets have been doing this and as a matter of course to the American psyche and thinking for decades upon decades, but because it is a tactic of demonic forces in the universe since the Garden of Eden, where they almost mesmerize you into believing that this is okay. This is all right. I can continue to go this way, even though you know it's going to destroy you. It's going to have terrible consequences. And you continue to go this way. It's kind of like the speech of Samuel to the people when they asked for a king, a man who could exercise authority and rule over them. And he tells them all the things that are going to come about. He's going to take and take and take and take and make his instruments of war and make your sons run before his chariots. He's going to do all these terrible things to you. And they say, okay, yeah, okay, we still want to have a king. And you think, like, are they paying attention? Hitler said something about the fact that if you're going to tell a lie, you tell a really big one. Because they're more likely to believe it. Because it is so horrendous, so complete, so unbelievable, that the mere shock factor of the lie causes people to accept it. It would have to be true. And by the same token, people can be confronted with the truth if they've already accepted something else, and they will deny it over and over again, no matter how much evidence you give. And Yuri talks about that. And we're going to read a number of quotes from him and some of the things that he says was their strategy. And he actually defected to the United States, saying that this was the only country at the time in the 80s that he could defect to. And he says that if Americans did not change their ways, it would soon that even this country you could not defect to. And of course, we just recently had a German family who came here to homeschool their kids. And the Justice Department was trying to send them back with unbelievably ridiculous arguments, saying that the fact that they have outlawed homeschooling in Germany and that their children's services is absolutely totalitarian, violating human rights all the time. Something that the European Union agrees with. A huge number of people have been saying for years that the German social services, children's services, has been totally a Nazi type, no control over it, no one who will answer for the things that they do. They wield tremendous, tremendous power. And this is complained about over and over again, many areas of both Germany and Europe. And the Attorney General of the United States says, oh no, because they outlaw homeschooling everywhere, there is no prejudice. And so therefore, there is no reason to believe that there is an uneven administration of justice. And so therefore they can't get asylum, and he wanted to send them back, and they actually fought this. And of course that's ridiculous. That's absurd. That is absolutely an insane argument. But they make it like it makes sense, and people wanting to believe that the Attorney General of the United States is going to make sense, they go, oh well, yeah, I can kind of see that. And you can even go to UN human rights lists, and they talk about the parents having a right to determine the education of their children. That's a natural right. And yet Germany denies it. And they have denied it since Adolf Hitler. And they tell you why they deny it. They don't want to see an alternative society, a parallel society operating within Germany. They want everybody thinking alike. And they tell you that. Thought police. 1984 stuff. And they tell you that, and people accept it, and they go, oh, well, yeah, that kind of makes sense. They don't think. They can't even imagine how this is such a violation of natural rights. I don't say human rights, I say natural rights. Yuri goes on to say, but in reality, the main emphasis of the KGB is not the area of intelligence at all. According to my opinion and the opinion of many defectors of my caliber, only about 15% of the time, money, manpower, are spent on espionage. As such, the other 85% is a slow process, which we call either ideological subversion or active measures. in the language of the KGB, or psychological warfare. What it basically means is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that despite the abundance of information, no one is able to come to sensible conclusion in the interest of defending themselves, their families, their community, or their country. Even with an abundance of information, people will continue to follow the path that's laid out before them. And we can actually see this same thing back when they were first translating the Bible into English, and you had Tyndale doing it, and actually commissioned by the King of England, who had a beef with the Pope at the time. And then when he starts doing it, suddenly they don't like it. They don't like what he's translating. And they go after him. Just subtle things. They see, well, no, wait a minute. If people know this and people know this, this is kind of bad. And they had to stop him. And he was altering his translation, working on his translations, and he was beginning to realize certain things, and they realized that he realized things, and they had to stop him, so they cut out his tongue and burned him at the stake. And the next guys who translated the Bible, the King James, they had to face that danger when they translated the Bible. And they did the best they could, according to what they tell us, under the circumstances that they had to work. Now realize that this is a team of people translating. All of them have gone to school, gone and studied Greek and Latin at universities that were already heavily influenced by an ideology and a hermeneutics that had distorted the gospel. So when they came to translate, they came to translate to fit what they already believed. Now, some of them were Protestant now, but they were born out of the Roman Catholicism. And Roman Catholicism had evolved over centuries. There was a huge amount of Christians in Europe in the 800s, 900s, and many of them, millions of them, were put to death because their view of Christianity was different than what was coming out of the Vatican and Rome. Millions, 60 million people. Their lands were robbed, they were driven out, sometimes all their clothes was even taken away. They were driven out into the snow and into the wilderness, beat, robbed, murdered, impaled, tortured, because they had a different opinion of the gospel. 500 years later, we have the Protestant Revolution, where men are beginning to look at the Bible and trying to figure out what is being said there, trying to find the translation of the Bible. And they started printing them. The assistant to Gutenberg was tried and put to death because he was printing the Bible. So many of them, they couldn't stop this. They realized they couldn't stop this. And certain groups within what we call Christianity, official Christianity at that time, realized that they're going to start printing Bibles. People are going to start reading them. We're going to need to work upon their perception of what they're reading in the Bible. We have to change the way they think about religion and about these things. And they have to masterfully, through sophistry, direct even the rebels, even the Protestants, away from the real truth. And they successfully did it. Very successfully did it. People have discovered pieces of the puzzle here and there, but they don't put the whole thing together. There's always something missing, and that is the essence of a lie. And modern Christendom is very much a lie, very, very much a deception. It has a great deal of truth, but in that truth is mixed falsehoods. And so we're going to look at what Yuri is telling us about ideological subversion, so that we understand the process and then see, has that been worked on us already through the ages, through generation after generation, to create a misunderstanding of the wholeness of the gospel of the kingdom? And I believe it has, and I believe we can show you, but I don't believe you will see it unless you are willing to see it. So we're going to go carefully here so that you have a chance to chew on this, because we're going to serve up some meat here. So anyway, there are four steps, according to Yuri, about this ideological subversion. One is demoralize the people, destabilization of society, crisis, and normalization, accepting the change as normal. Now, when we talk about things like crisis, don't think of one single crisis. Think of series of crises, the series of destabilization, a series of demoralization. It's not like we do this and then all of a sudden we jump to this and then we jump to that. This is an ongoing cyclical process. You demoralize a little bit, destabilize a little bit, cause some crisis to distract people, and come out of that with some sort of the new norm. And this has happened on all levels of society. It's happened in the educational system. And the Soviets were not alone in this, because the idea is to weaken the people so that you get power over them. Getting power gives you an advantage, makes you wealthy, gives you the opportunity for wealth and control and power. And there are people who spiritually are desirous of that power. So anyway, there was this amazing interview. And if you actually go to our website, preparingyou.com, preparingyou.com, and type in the search engine, ideological subversion, two words, you will find this article. And there are a number of YouTube videos of an interview with Yuri where he explains some of this stuff. And I've just taken transcripts and copied some of it down, and we'll read little bits and pieces of it. But it's an amazing interview. It explains these four basic steps of ideological subversion used in social engineering entire generations into thinking a certain way. It's shocking because the American nation and the whole world has been transformed as it traveled the same road, the same path. It is time to turn around for those who have the courage and the character to go the other way. And of course, that's what Christ, John the Baptist, was doing, because the same process, it worked in Rome. Rome was a republic. It became an empire. They still call it a republic, but it was actually an empire. Completely different form of government. But they kept the old names, and people accepted it. And it changed the very nature of society, of Roman society, and caused it to decay and collapse. And of course, that's the direction that the Soviets wanted to see with America. They couldn't defeat it. It was so powerful. Like, it had this tremendous industry, and it was because the people had a certain moral character about a work ethic and a community ethic. They're a very strong community. And they had to undermine that, to weaken society, because they could not defeat us militarily. And they have successfully weakened that society. America is now losing wars on a pretty regular basis. And even when they supposedly win it, they find themselves still engaged in endless battles, which may be partially by design, because in most cases, none of the battles were even necessary. I've talked before about Vietnam. You could have bought Vietnam with the money we spend on bombing. Ho Chi Minh was pro-American, wanted to set up a democracy, if not a republic, after World War II. He was very pro-American. If we had supported him, that's what he would have done. And there was absolutely no need to fight them and go to war. They didn't want communism. It was just that they didn't want China in there for sure. They'd been fighting with China for hundreds of years. But they didn't want the French in there either. They didn't want to be second or third class citizens in their own country. And that's what the war was all about. And if we were really promoting the liberty and freedom that once made America great, they would have welcomed us with open arms. When Ho Chi Minh first came into the cities after World War II, he carried an American flag. He was pro-America. Always was. And all we had to do is be pro-American principles, and we would have made a great ally in Vietnam. And it's actually not too far from being an ally now. Except for the fact that we're our own worst enemy, because we have lost the wisdom and the direction of the American people that made them once a great society. And now we live like Rome upon the laurels of past efforts, and that is decaying away, and our wealth is gone from being the wealthiest nation to the most indebted nation. We don't have the industry we once had before. But the real loss is the loss of moral character. In the video, Yuri explains each of these four different things, this demoralization and destabilization crisis and normalization of the new norm. And demoralization has been ongoing in the public school systems for decades. This includes not teaching children about American history, to undermining those virtuous individuals who struggled with the moral issues of society in early America. They're not told of the moral character and convictions of men like George Washington, and have little or no idea of the true conflict and points of contention between the free men in America and the subjects in the crown. We really don't understand. And we've talked before how that's been removed from the history books. Absolutely just removed from the history books over at least 50 years, starting back in 1908, where they just simply deleted certain stories and certain things about character. And I've had this collection of history books for years. I don't have it like in a glass case or anything, but we just accumulated these books. They're all just piled up in bookshelves that we made out in the shop, and they're there. And then, of course, I've read others. I couldn't buy some of them because I couldn't afford them, but I got a chance to read many of them. And you could see history just changing people, and they do it by deleting certain items from the history. So you don't really understand what was going on. You know, George Washington had wooden teeth, and he was married to Martha and all these things, but you don't really know what was driving the man. As well as a lot of other men like Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys and so many people that we used to study in school, and no longer do we even look at them, because you might find out what was really going on in early America. We have people telling me that we were fighting for the Constitution in the American Revolution. Well, there was no Constitution. It didn't even exist. Even 20 years after the American Revolution, most Americans were absolutely opposed to the Constitution. They weren't fighting for it. They were against it. But anyway, another story. You can read Contracts, Covenants, and Constitutions, or listen to the audios on our archive, and you can find out about that. Let's stay with Yuri here. Also points out that this ideological subversion or brainwashing works to such an extent that people refuse to accept facts, logic, or reason, even when it is presented to them. They think you're trying to deceive them somehow. But anyway, we're going to talk about that. We're going to show you some of the places where people just simply, their minds shut off, and they can't go there when we return to Keys of the Kingdom. We'll be right back.
Have you ever looked at the things happening in the world today and felt that something just wasn't right? but couldn't put your finger on it? Have you ever heard the phrase, God bless America, and wondered to yourself, does he really? Or have you ever looked at the government's policies on things such as abortion or same-sex marriage and asked yourself, how could they? Or where are all the Christians voicing their outrage? These are hard questions that many people today ask themselves. But along with those hard questions come some very hard answers. Answers that you may never heard before, but nonetheless will answer these and other questions you may have. So if you're looking for answers, join us at hisholychurch.org. It's not what you might think, and it will open the heart and mind to a whole other world that you never even knew existed. It did for me and many others. I know it will for you as well. So join us as we seek the kingdom of God and His righteousness at hisholychurch.org.
The Creator is the God of the living, not the God of the dead. His kingdom was, is, and will be forever on earth as it is in heaven. Start by connecting and finding other kingdom-seeking families on the His Holy Church Living Network. Visit www.hisholychurch.org to start your journey back to your unalienable birthright.
I'm Brother Justice, and I'm a minister of His Holy Church of Sacramento, California. His Holy Church is a powerful weapon in the hands of God. The books, The Covenants of the Gods, and Thy Kingdom Come has changed the course of my life forever. For those of you who are truly looking for the way, I encourage you to look to His Holy Church at www.hisholychurch.org. May the good Lord bless you and keep you.
Hi, I'm Brent. I'm a contact minister for the Living Network in Northeast Missouri. You're not the only one out there with the desire to learn the truth. There are people all over the world coming together in faith, hope, and charity. Join us at one of the upcoming gatherings to meet new people, fellowship, work, and play. Whether it's the Fall Burning Bush Festival in Oregon or the Spring Gathering in Northeast Missouri, you'll get all the details when you join the Living Network. Go to hisholychurch.org and click on the network link. Find out what you've been missing. You'll be glad you did.
Things seem to be going wrong in the world today. Every aspect of our life seems to be under attack sometimes. Many struggle to make sense out of it. What is really going on? Identifying the problem is critical to any solution. Many people claim to have answers. But what is the truth? What works? What has worked in the past? History does repeat itself, and you must learn from it. You have choices. We cannot change the course of history, but we may change our role in it. All roads lead to Rome. All roads lead to the kingdom of God. The question is, which way are you going? Join us to make sense out of it all for an iconoclastic look at the world yesterday, today, and tomorrow, and hear about the keys of the kingdom.
Well, welcome back to Keys of the Kingdom. He's talking about this ideological subversion, actually literally brainwashing, working so well that people refuse to accept facts and logic and reason when presented with them in order to show them that what they think is good or right is actually a bad thing. They can't even see it. They can't even go down that road. Once an idea is accepted as true, it requires both humility and courage to free your mind from its grip. So if you accept a lie, like surely you will not die like Eve in the garden. Once she accepted that, she couldn't go back. Not easily. Not without this strange thing we call repentance. So this grip, the lie itself, cripples us so we cannot see a solution when it's laid out right in front of us. And I deal with this all the time because Christ had a solution. But most Christians don't know what that solution was. Not because the Soviet Union were bringing in ideological subversion, but somebody did. Many people did, because Christ set you free, and there is a large number of people in institutions, from religion to politics to what have you, that want control over others. They literally get up in the morning and they desire to control the lives of others. Like Claggett and the story of Billy Budd. He just had to corrupt Billy, even if it cost him his own life. It was essential. He could not have him a pure soul. He needed to corrupt him, like the devil himself. Once an idea is accepted as true, it requires that humility and courage to free yourself from it. Urey also stated, ideological subversion, or active measures, or psychological warfare, is to change the perception of reality of every American to such an extent that in spite of the abundant information, no one is able to come to a sensible conclusion in the interest of defending even themselves. Urey said, a great brainwashing process which goes very slowly and is divided into these four basic stages, the first being demoralization. The demoralization of a country is a process of encouraging unrighteous behavior, of encouraging condescension of moral character, and belittling those who take a high moral position. And of course, that's exactly what took place during the Inquisitions and the Bugarumps, where this new modern Christianity in the 1000s and 1100s went in and literally drove out millions of people out of their homes because they were people of peace. They drove them out. And they had the ability to do this because they were learning how to put large armies into the field and move them from valley to valley. So a large army could literally come into a rather peaceful valley and absolutely devastate it. In order to do this, you had to give the power to the soldiers to do just about anything they wanted. And they did just about anything they wanted. It was a total reign of terror. And evil had its way with the people. And it made the people more evil, more decadent, more destructive. But this was more subtle. But it's in some ways the same, part of the same process, because there are these several, like crisis is part of that process. But you need this demoralization. He talks about an effective program of ideological subversion is to ridicule or discount the moral ideals from which a nation draws its common moral fabric of society. This will include the promotion through the media of hedonism. And people don't know necessarily what hedonism is, but it's a school of thought that argues that pleasure is the only intrinsic good. If it feels good, do it. You've ever heard that? That's hedonism. And it promotes other things like the sanctity of life. Abortion is good. It's a right. Anybody who interferes with your right to kill your unborn child is supposedly some kind of ridiculous, absurd, insane person. And you have to put them down. You know, if somebody believes in Christianity, you have to mock them. I saw a cartoon the other day. It showed a picture, and I don't want to pick on the poor Muslims, but it shows a picture of the Quran in a toilet and a picture of the Bible in a toilet. And the caption is the Bible in the toilet is art, but the Quran in the toilet is hate speech. And that's literally what's happened, is that people will mock, you know, Christ and the symbols of Christianity, and it's called art. But if you do anything like that against Muslims or Jews, and that is supposedly hate, you know, and it happens all the time. We see this. And then if you get angry at those events, if you get angry and judgmental when that injustice is manifest before you, it's going to draw you into this dialectic where they're going to end up changing or using you to create change. And this is why you have to, if you really follow the ways of Christ, you're completely outside of this dialectic. You're not a part of it. And there's a tremendous spiritual energy that's in this process. You'll see socialists and progressives, they call themselves now. You know, if you have a debate with them, they are calling people names, they're yelling, they're laughing, they're mocking, they're rude. They can't have a decent discussion. And I can show you this over and over again. I can manifest it. Occasionally you'll find a socialist who has a very rational way of talking, but if you actually present a good, concise argument to them, they will resort to these tactics of ridicule and mocking. They do it every time. They almost cannot help it because it's part of the spirit by which they operate. This licensing of self-service leads to self-absorption, to the point of self-destruction even. It creates so that you, this is why we see such a rise in suicides. And you will see a rise in other immoral self-destructive activities, from drugs to lifestyles to undermining the very foundation of society, which is marriage, family. That's where society is born, within the family. You're going to naturally undermine the natural use of reproduction. You're going to naturally do that. This is why people think that the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was sodomy. No, that was a byproduct of the sin of Sodom and Gomorrah. The sin of Sodom and Gomorrah was socialism. In a time of affluence, they did not strengthen the poor, they weakened the poor. They took care of the poor, but they weakened them. They promised them liberty and protection and social security. And they bound the people into these systems. And they had all, this is the way the city-states operated. This is how they drew you in. And the immoral activity is just the icing on the cake until it becomes out of control and pervasive. And the society itself becomes unproductive. And then they have to bring in other people, and which sometimes mean wars. The union of man and woman is to perpetuate the species of mankind. It isn't for self-gratification. And what happens is you end up with people like we've seen, I guess it was actually a little while ago now, where somebody is arguing in front of the Senate committee that the government should supply her with birth control because she can't afford it while she's going to college, also receiving government aid to do that. Her boyfriend evidently can't afford it either. But the reality is you don't need to pervert and whore around with the natural use, but they do, and they can't. The fact that that argument even was made in the Senate, in this committee, is evidence that we have already gone insane, that we are already crazy. Why in the world does somebody else have to pay for your promiscuity, so you can have safe, promiscuous, self-destructive activity? It's insane. But they make this argument, and people actually come to their defense. And if you point out how this is crazy, then you're some kind of a bigot and prejudiced, and you don't believe in rights. The mere idea that you're going to ask for money from the government, who's only going to take it away from your neighbor, it already shows us that you don't care about people's rights. You want to take from others so that you don't have to pay your own way. That used to be almost unheard of in America. A movie about a boxer where the guy had to go on welfare, government aid. It was just a slight amount of aid in those days. And he felt so bad about that. But his family, he just couldn't work. His hand was broken. And it was hard to find jobs, and his family was freezing. So they went on government aid, and eventually he got work, and he got him off aid, and then he actually took the money back to government aid office and wanted to pay it back. And people thought that was strange. Like, what are you doing? Nobody pays it back. Why not? Yet the reality is that, you know, I've known a pastor who helped out a family who was in financial need. that the church actually put up some money. We've done this, where we put up money and help somebody who couldn't make a payment, that they were in financial difficulty. And he tells me about this family that helped, and then the family got on its feet. Family never paid the money back to the church. Now, there is no contract that requires them to do that. But the morality of love would say, yeah, we have to pay the church back. We have to pay the church back because otherwise it won't have the money to help out the next family. It's not free money. It's Christ's money that somebody gave you. You're now in debt to Christ. You need to pay that back. Every time you receive a free benefit, you have to pay that back. So many people say, oh, well, I paid in, so I now get this free benefit. But the reality is that seldom does that pan out. And that's not the way it works. That every breath you take is a gift. And so half of every breath you take should be for the service of others. Because so many people worked to even get you to the point where you're even alive. And you're in debt. You used to be in debt to your parents who raised you up, but now you're in debt to the state. And the state is in debt to somebody else. It's all about debt. All was in opposition to the Sabbath, which is about debt, not a day. It's about working and taking your rest, not taking your rest and then owing your labor. That's what it's really all about. Yes, you should rest every so often and step back from your own strivings and realize that God's in charge. But the spirit of the Sabbath is to avoid debt. Generations of American students were fed within the walls of universities and schools the curriculum of ideological change. According to Urey, in other words, Marxism, Leninism, ideology, was pumped into the soft heads of American students without being challenged or counterbalanced by the basic values of Americanism, American patriotism. The result you can actually see in the people. Now, I homeschool my kids, and parents question whether that was a good idea in the local community. Years later, when their kids came back from college with ideas that were completely diametrically opposed to what they believe, they talked about how our kids were so much better. What is it with our kids that is different than their kids? They don't even know what their kids are learning in school. I mean, we could get off on that whole homeschooling thing, and we've written some things about that. The reality is that you should get your kids out of public education, right now, as soon as possible, and never look back. And get away from the curriculum of those books. Just talking to my daughter who's homeschooling her kids and was talking about Bastiat and how he was so much against socialism way back then when there was almost no socialism around. Not like we see it today. And he was talking about a system of plundering. It was so obvious. But nobody even reads Bastiat in schools anymore. They don't know. They don't read even the early Americans. And what early American literature that has survived has been filtered. So only certain stuff survives for your kids to study, if they even studied history at all. But Urey goes on to say, you are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. And what is he talking about? He says, most of the people who graduated in the 60s, dropouts, or half-baked intellectuals are now occupying positions of power in the government, civil service, business, mass media, educational systems. You are stuck with them. You cannot get rid of them. They are contaminated. He's saying this back in the 80s. They are programmed to think and react to certain stimuli in a certain pattern. You cannot change their minds, even if you expose them to the authentic information, even if you prove that white is white and black is black. you still cannot change the basic perception and logic of behavior. In other words, the process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. He says it would take 15 or 20 years to change this. Now it would even take more, because you don't have the people to change it with. The fact is, you yourself are subject to that change. Ideas that you have in your mind now are the result of things that you have been taught and told, convinced of, many of which are simply not true. Any opposition to socialism to be met with bewilderment or disdain, despite the historical evidence that it always debilitates society and corrupts governments. A fellow, Ion Pasepa, former general of the Soviet bloc intelligence service, told Robert Bucher, "The whole foreign policy of the Soviet bloc states, indeed, its whole economic and military might revolved around the large Soviet objective of destroying America from within through the use of lies. The Soviets saw disinformation as a vital tool in the dialectic advance of world communism. KGB priority number one was to damage American power, judgment, and credibility. As a spy chief and a general in the former Soviet satellite of Romania," he says, "I produced the very same vitriol John Kerry repeated to the U.S. Congress almost word for word and planted it in leftist movements throughout Europe. KGB Chairman Yuri Andropov managed our anti-Vietnam War operation. The fact is that actually I was drafted and was going to go to Vietnam. I was against the war, but I thought I owed it to my country. But then I later sat in a car with the head of the Democratic Party in Wisconsin, who told me that he was at the meeting with Eisenhower when it was decided to have a series of brush wars in Southeast Asia for the purposes of stimulating the coal and steel industry in the United States. That's why we were in Vietnam. There was absolutely no need for that. And the Soviet Union didn't want it either. Vietnam wasn't some sort of ally, or it was costing them more. They always would get in these conflicts for the purposes of draining us. They would do it cheap, and then they would cause us to do it more expensively, which we always do. And during times of war, this allows these agents to make the changes, the other part of that process, the normalization. During times of war, that is, they're more able to do that. They had allies in America, just like the Nazis had allies in America before World War II. The Soviet bloc had allies in big industry in America, because if they cooperated, they would be able to open up plants in the Soviet Union and make millions and millions of dollars. And it's all about money and power. And the reason we're looking at this is so that you can see the process. And then you can look at the evolution of Christianity from what Christ said it was to what we're being told today in the modern churches. Because what we're being told today is not true. It has a lot of truth in it, but where is the lie? Where is the deception? This is what you need to know. Yuri, speaking on this ideological subversion in America, said, "Marxism-Leninist ideology is being pumped into those soft heads of at least three generations of American students." Three generations. How do you reverse that? How do you go back now? The parents don't know what to teach their kids. I tell you, the only hope you have is home-educated children. And they know that. And there will be a war against home education. Everyone should be home educating their kids. And you need to start now. You need to start doing it in earnest and begin to find out that which you were not taught, your father was not taught, and maybe even your grandfather was not taught, and begin to teach it to your children. I know that when we began to homeschool, and this is why I collected these history books, is I was just looking for history books. I didn't know they had changed them. I didn't know they had altered them. I didn't find out about, I could see it. I could see the evidence of it because I was reading these books. And I was, look at, they left that out. They left that out. That's going to change the way you're going to look at these things. And I was changing the way I was looking at it because in reading those older history books, some of them were much older than the ones that I had received when I was in school. So my view of history was changing back to what it used to be back before 1920s. And then I'm trying to impart that to my children, but I didn't understand then that this was actually a plot and a plan that was eventually uncovered by the Reese Commission and exposed. You have been victimized by that plan. Your view of history, if you think the Constitution is your salvation, you've already been deceived. It is not. If you think your rights come from the Constitution, if you're pleading constitutional rights and trying to become free because of that, you're already lost. And you're lost because you're already deceived. Now, I know that people don't want to accept that, which is why I had to write a whole book on it, which you can download for free. But it's true. The Constitution is not your answer. It is actually the tool by which you were enslaved. It didn't enslave you, but elements of that were used. What really enslaved you is your covetousness, your desire for benefits at the expense of your neighbor. Through covetousness, you were made merchant of. Peter knew this. You were made merchandise through your covetousness. Peter prophesied that 2,000 years ago. The same thing that Uri is talking about has been implemented on us for far more than three generations. And so it's not enough to go back to the 1920s or our understanding of history in the 1890s. We have to go all the way back to understand what we were missing. And you don't actually have to go all the way back. You have to see the process of deception. And that's why we're working on this series. So anyway, a large number of these people have been contaminated, and you cannot change their minds. Even if you expose them to the truth, the question is, if we expose you to the truth, can your mind be changed? Well, hopefully, through the revelation of God, through the revelations of Christ in your heart and your mind can be made anew. So this process of demoralization is complete and irreversible. To rid society of these people, you need another 20 to 15 years to educate a new generation of patriotically minded, although I don't like that particular word, and I can tell you that later, and common sense people who would be acting in favor and in the interests of America. How do we do that? Now, the reality is I don't think there's any easy way. I know there are things that we can do now to start in that direction, but there is no easy way to do that. And we're going to go over some of those as well as go through this whole process that Uri is talking about. But we'll have to do that next time on Keys to the Kingdom. Until then, may peace be upon your house and may God be with you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.